Around the world, democracy is shifting. In the US, Trump's MAGA movement has reshaped the Republican Party. In Europe, nationalist movements, once in the margins, are now mainstream. Across Southern Africa, liberation movements that dominated politics for decades are steadily losing ground. And here at home, South Africa has entered a new phase. The ANC has lost its majority, and national power is now shared in a new government of national unity. Tonight's question isn't about parties, it's about voters. Are citizens changing, or is democracy changing around them? Thank you for joining us, everybody. And starting on my left, closest to me, not because of any ideological...
We've got the PAs, Ishmael Stienka, who works at local government, newly elected councillor for Diepkloof and Noordkust.
And Orlando. Orlando and Pennyville as well.
And he sees politics on a daily basis where it matters most. At service delivery, where the voters are on the ground. And in the middle, the rose of my thoughts, we've got Lerato Madisha from Billboard South Africa, representing a younger generation in politics. And hopefully a youth perspective and maybe a changed political ideology. And furthest to me, from the DA, and also not because you are far right, my former mayor of Tshwane and leading the DA in Gauteng, he operates in the space where coalition and opposition politics intersect. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And this is a discussion, it's not a QA. And we can all have, I'd love to hear all of your opinions, and later we'll open up the floor. But democracy is changing globally. Do you think that voters are becoming irrational, or they are simply responding to ineffective governance, or are they just becoming more conservative? Anyone?
Okay, so I'll start. I think what is happening the world over is that I've seen a trend where there is more inwardly looking nations or nation building, and parties that are now coming out more and more, they tend to be more inwardly looking. Look at what is happening in the U.S. I see Bramonji is there, and he's written a very interesting article about poking the bear in the U.S. We'll go into that a little bit later on. But if you look at what is happening in the U.S., let's make America great again. It's all about America first. Look at what is happening in Germany, the Linke coming out. It's all about conservatism. It's all about me and us, and then, you know, everybody else must then come second. I can give you a number of examples, and this is because we have gotten into a space where we haven't really been expanding and creating opportunities. And this is why there is a trust deficit that seems to be developing, is because we haven't really been growing this space. And in South Africa, this is why you have parties that, you know, get popularity by saying foreigners must go and all of that. Whereas we should be focusing on what are we creating? Are we creating the space and the economic means in order for people to, you know, to be able to then develop and in order to prosper? And that's where we find ourselves from a political space. So the political parties that become appealing are political parties that now seems to be on the rhetoric of me and us, and then let's close the space, instead of saying, how do we then expand the space so that we're able to then allow for people to prosper? And I think that's where the politics of the world are heading towards. I cannot say I agree with it, but that's where we are heading.
Sounds like shots fired, Ishmael. I'm going to come to you and say, you know, your party leader in particular is one that is well known for the Abahande.
Yes.
And also your party has been seen to be positioning and very much on a very narrow nationalist way of thinking, particularly the colored community, feeling a little bit that over the years have been neglected. Do you see this as a way that the smaller parties, even in South Africa and their growth, is responding to this way of seeing the world at the voter perspective?
Look, let me start by saying I think South Africa has got a great democracy. However, our democracy is flawed completely, especially when you go to local level. Corruption has destroyed us. Inequality has destroyed us as a country. And that is where, as you just mentioned, the marginalization of certain ethnic groups or certain races within South Africa. And that is where we as a party come in and we say, look, we cannot have only certain parts of South Africa or certain parts of communities or certain parts of regions benefiting from the democracy that we all enjoy, that most of us fought for, and yet only certain parts of South Africa or certain races within South Africa or certain ethnic groups is enjoying the full pleasure of democracy. And in terms of the Abahambe issue, and there is something that's very huge where the PA is concerned, because foreigners are experiencing benefits that some of us South Africans are not experiencing. When you go to hospitals, you'll find our South Africans are laying on the floors while the foreigners are laying on beds and having their kids. They will travel all the way from Mozambique or wherever they come from and have their kids here. And we cannot allow that. And so as a party, we are saying that the democracy needs to apply to every single person in South Africa.
Lerato, you are in a new party, new formation, contested election, national elections for the first time in our last national election. Do you think that your party is responding to a you type of voter, or are you simply responding to what the environment is requesting, that we're unhappy with what's in government, maybe something new?
I think we're merely responding to a system that devalues accountability. We've got this wonderful dreams that I think are shared. It's not unique to anybody. Yet we are disjointed in that the systems that we've built, brilliant as they may be, they shy away from self-reflection in order to give account of the matrices that would speak to making the system work. So the failure of our generation or the current democracy is that nobody wants to be told you're not working. What you're doing is a failure. You're going about the things
in the wrong way. So when I did a test in the audience based on the reconciliation barometer, that 8 out of 10 South Africans distrust our politicians. Mm. You saw the room as well.
Yes.
People, when I asked the question, do you think that voters are impatient with the way that government is responding? And this is the way, this is the reason why we see so few people showing up at the polls?
I don't think that the voters are impatient. I think voters have been very patient and very lenient for a very, very long time, to a point where even now voters, residents are being blamed for failures of government. There's no electricity. It's residents who get blamed. Kids are not in school. Their parents are to be blamed for why kids are not in school while there's no schools, or while the school buildings are there and they're not being maintained, and therefore parents are now seeking somewhere else to be able to then take their kids. Voters have been patient, but again, politicians have been taking advantage of it. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be picking up on you, my brother. The fact of the matter is, we don't have an issue of resource constraints. We have an issue of management that we're sitting with, right? We know how many people are flocking into Gauteng on a yearly basis. I promise you, you look at the last 10 years, you can project what is the growth of Gauteng, right? And you can see how people are. Please go and ask departments, how are they planning for the growth that is taking place in Gauteng? Ask them how many schools are they building. Ask them of the infrastructure master plan, whether infrastructure master plan talks of the Gauteng of the future. Talk about whether, the safety and security. I mean, the Interpol and the United Nations standards is that there should be one policeman per 120 at least. Do you know what we're sitting with in Gauteng? 1 to 800. Now, if you are then saying, I want to then fight crime, if you are saying, I want to then deal with the issues of infrastructure so that I can provide better services, if you are then saying, I want to deal with the issues of education, with the issues of health, are you managing the resources that you have properly? Or we get to a point where it is convenient and easy to then blame foreign nationals or people that are coming. You know, and this is what I always say. You start blaming people that are far out, so you blame foreign nationals. And then you move closer. No, we don't want Zulus in Limpopo. Then you don't want this kind of people in this area. So at some point, you're going to end up saying, I don't want women in this area. So when does it stop? When does it stop blaming and get to a point where we're saying, this is what we now need to then do to fix the problem so that we don't have to blame shift and then blame other people? I think that's the conversation that South Africa needs to then have. And this is why people are getting so frustrated with what is happening, because, you know, we see, we hear, and it's like we become so desensitized about what is happening. So
coalition politics, even going now into local government election, it is clear that the voters are choosing different parties and trying a different thing. Does coalition politics lend itself to more accountability, better planning, a way of working together? You're in the in the government.
Imagine if we didn't have coalition in a national government, you would be paying an additional percentage of tax as things stand. You'll be paying an additional VAT, number one. Number two, you will still be in junk status with your international rating agencies. It is because when we got in, we started talking and forcing certain changes and reforms to be taking place. And I don't want to, you know, say the DA did this or the PA did this. It was a thing of parties that says we cannot continue, you know, with the same and expect different results. It's taking slow because the ANC has been used to being in government all by themselves. They're digging in certain instances. And unfortunately, you find that administration is so politicized that even when you have new political bosses, you find that the transformation is taking a long time. You find that the new ideas to then reform administration is taking a long time because kunelaba about ustholela siyenza kanje. And that's what is taking time. And this is what, unfortunately, is making the wheels to turn a little bit slower than they should be.
Ishmael, you're new in the council of Johannesburg. Do you feel that the voters understand these machinations and even care? Do they care about it or not? I'm going to talk about provincial as well.
Look, let me quickly start off with, I just want to add to what was said now. The biggest problem is sitting, or used to sit, was accountability. And that's where coalition government plays a huge role in ensuring there's accountability. Before, you had one boss and everyone followed him. Now you've got people that will say, oh, wait, the decision you're about to make is a wrong decision. Let's change this. So coalition government has come and it's changed the way politics is running in South Africa. And I think a lot of other parties will say coalition government doesn't work. But coalition government was the best thing that could ever happen to South Africa. And there is a transition in that. So a lot of people might not understand or don't want to see the beauty part of the coalition government. And on local government level, people don't understand these things. I sat in one meeting, my very first meeting I sat with Ward Governance, and I asked them a question. I said, why is it there's only old people sitting here? That was my question.
Who are these people that you say don't understand? The politicians themselves?
No. The people on the ground. The people on the ground. So now I'm sitting there in a meeting, and I'm asking, why is there only old people? Remember, I'm coming here to a Ward Governance that's already existing. Why is there only old people? And I've attended a lot of meetings, local meetings in a local area, and I don't see youngsters. And they said, because they're not interested. I said, it's because we're not doing politics proper. We're not practicing politics proper. We're supposed to grab these youngsters. We're supposed to pull them in, teach them politics, teach them how government works, teach them how the Constitution, how does it speak to you? Teach them the rights. And then they will become more involved in politics. And we'll have more young people stepping up to be able to assist us, brighter minds, better ideas. And that is what we're supposed to do. In terms of how local government is being, I would say, is being undermined. And that is where democracy starts. That is where you hear the voice direct. That is where frustrations are being showed for directly. And that is where government needs to understand, with coalition governments need to understand, strengthen local government better, give the councillors better opportunities to do better within their hordes. Because when you look at how things are done, and that is why people are not interested on local level. That is why young people, and I'm passionate about that, that young people must get more involved. But how do we do it as a governor? We need to introduce things better to them. We need to involve them more. So and
I want to shift it away from an ideological, the government needs to be doing this, needs to be doing that. Lerato, you are a young person. You are in a new party. Do you think that the way that you communicate is attractive enough, is interesting enough, is compelling enough for young people to want to participate beyond the ideology?
I think communication alone is not enough. They have had too many promises thus far, and that is why the disjointment from politics. Our generation of young people... If I can use a picture of a child who grew in a tumultuous home or a very violent upbringing, you can't tell them nothing about, an aggressive parent. They've seen it all. They've been through it all. What they need to see is somebody modeling the change they want to see for them to heal from that and to actually trust again. So, unfortunately, the parent needs to change the environment for things to get well again, because the perpetrator has a very well managed ecosystem that protects their actions. Madanga Commission being such exemplary. So until we break that mold of a sick society being protected by more sick, narcissistic policing, if I can use the word, then we're staying in the same cycle. And how can you build trust in such an ecosystem?
Talking about kind of a system that protects itself, I want us to talk a little bit about influence, and in particular, profits and private influence within our government. You know, we talk a lot about who pays for what in our government. Should we start treating kind of foreign interventions, NGOs that are bringing in their kind of thinking as a threat to our government? How do we protect South Africans more and in a more South Africanist political environment? Is our democracy under threat from foreign influences?
I don't know if our democracy is under threat. What I can tell you the problem is if you don't know where you're going, anything goes, right? If I ask this room now, what are the five things that South Africa is chasing right now? What is the answer? What are the five things that we want to then achieve? So we've had the NDP 2030. We're now at 4 years before the end of it. How much of it have we really achieved? Before that, there were other programs that have been put together and plans that have been put together. And I think this is where we as South Africans need to then agree, all political parties. What are the five things? And this is what got me excited when there was this conversation about a potential national dialogue, right? Because I thought it would be not a political stunt. It would be a dialogue to then say, where are we? Where are we going? How do we get there? Can we agree on five things that become non-negotiable, irrespective of what political party you represent in government? If we agree on these things, how do we then take them forward? So let's say, for instance, we say by this time, there shouldn't be a child that doesn't have access, or there shouldn't be denied access to the basic health services, and it should be of a good quality. How do we then deal with it? So are we looking at the nurses that have been trained? Are we looking at the infrastructure that is there? Are we able to then put some timelines to that? Can we agree on what the economy of South Africa in the next 20, 25, 30 years is going to look like? How do you then train this generation that is coming to then be ready for that economy that is coming, so that you're able to then invest at a school level what you want to then build? If we are saying we want to be the manufacturing hub of the Southern Africa or Africa, what are we doing in terms of building infrastructure to that? So can we agree on five things that we say, irrespective of whether it's the DA or the ANC or the PA or BOSA that is in government, these are the five things that shouldn't be negotiated by anybody. And if you get to then understanding and agreeing on that, this issue of then saying there's foreign influence or all of that, these things fall by the wayside, because of then you are dealing with the core things that you need to be dealing with. China is a great example. I'm sorry to be saying this, but my party will have a fit in with that. But the truth, China is a great example. It wouldn't matter if it's Xi Jinping or whoever comes. There's a clear plan. There's a silk plan that they have. They know where they're going. They know what they need to be doing. Go and look at the schools. Go look at the environment. Go look at where they are building infrastructure-wise. They are building towards what they want to then do. And they're teaching their kids, in the way in which they are now going to be helping in pumping the economy and pumping, China as they want it to go. And I think that's going to be...
You talk about a consensus, you talk about a national plan, a dialogue where everybody can come together, where we have independent data, and again, the room showed that less than 40% of all South Africans actually trust our politicians, trust our parliament. So my question to you is, do you think that your parties are doing enough to rebuild this trust? And how can, as a democracy as a whole, so that it doesn't fall apart, make sure that we can rebuild this trust? Do you think your parties are doing enough?
I think our party is definitely doing enough. The PA...
Definitely doing enough.
We're doing enough to gain trust. Mm-hmm. The PA has got a slogan currently, or campaign slogan rather, that says Gronto. Simply means going to the ground. And that is so significant, because unless you are in touch with the people on the ground, you can never gain their trust. And trust is very important in the sense of you must be able to be there, not to be untouchable. The problem with politicians has become where they are now celebrities. They are untouchable. When they come to the communities, security guards and bodyguards all around them, ward councillors doesn't go to the community, sit in an office and they do absolutely nothing. And for me, that is where we are as the PA, whether you are a parliamentarian, whether you're sitting in legislature, whether you're sitting in local government, when it's time to say Gronto, we all go to the ground and we make sure we're in touch with the people. We are not celebrities. You eat with what they eat, you drink what they eat, what they drink. And many will say, I was even said, don't take anything from anyone anymore. Don't go visit people's houses. It's dangerous. Don't allow them to come to your house. It's dangerous. But being an activist before, how do you tell people you're not allowed to come to my house? How do you tell people you're not? And that is where people build trust within you, because they see you are open and pure and clear communication. And that is what we believe in. Communication is key to building trust. A lot of, it was mentioned before, in terms of communication lines and how does it... You see the problem that we have, and I sent a message through to Ward Governance a few weeks back, and I said, you see the problem is, you don't understand that as a layman's person that's living next to me, or it's living in my area, that does not understand the wording that you are put in there, and will never understand what's the way forward. Sometimes we need to bring it to the ground, break it down and feed it to the community. And that's how we're going to build the trust. Be transparent. And I can tell you, as a Patriotic Alliance, we are achieving that. People are trusting us more and more. We are growing. We have a growth of 4,000%. And that speaks for itself.
As my colleague just said, the everyday person, let me use the term, or the grounds people, are not interested in the English filled in boardrooms and in parliament. They're really interested in the price of mealie meal going up or down. And I believe that by what we have spearheaded as a as a party to really grassroots go to people and listen to their issues, but collaboratively as well solve those issues, not impose solutions, but rather collaborate in really accelerating and bringing solutions that speaks to their needs. That is what one thing that has really stood out and that which I really advocate for as a person. Because no matter how much I can reach out to you, until I understand what you're going through and are able to actually ask you, how do you think this can be solved? And we collaboratively solve that, then that speaks to the needs and the solutions that are relevant for you, not thoughtful for you. Because I can have a 5-year plan, 5-point plan for you that is totally disjointed from your pain points.
So we have a very young democracy, but we also have a very young voter base. You know, the median age in South Africa is something like 27. And just looking, even at our neighbors, looking at what happened in Mozambique when they voted last year, what happened in Botswana, what happened, you know, is South Africa at a place where the young people have forgotten what was before, and having lived through so much dysfunction, so much talk of corruption and a government that has failed to deliver. Do you think that this has created a voter base that is uninterested in showing up because the government has failed to deliver?
Absolutely. I think there's a combination of things. One, while we do an introspection as political parties, are we speaking the language that the young people want to hear? That's I think all of us need to then be able to then respond to that. Yes, we do our TikToks and all of that, because literally when I see with my own teenagers, you're talking to them, they're on the phone. Yeah, they're responding, but they're on their phones, right? Are we talking to them on the platform that they want to then engage? Are we engaging them on the relevant issues? But here's another thing. That's why I was saying this is a combination of things. We have said in South Africa, we are free and there's democracy and everybody's, you know, free to do what they want. But have we really explained what the responsibility of that freedom is? Do people understand, especially the young ones who should actually be embracing this thing that people died, fought and died for, and embracing this thing and say, how do we then take it forward? And that is the responsibility that comes with that freedom. And I don't think that this is something that especially those that have been born into this freedom really appreciate. So there is that conversation. But also, I think you ask a question about what do people vote for, right? And parties spend years and months and all of that researching so that they're able to then put their manifestos together. How many do actually then take manifestos and say, before I vote for you, I'm going to then see what you have done with the manifesto the last time. So how many of these things in the manifesto that you said you will do actually have been done? People were promised 1 million houses in Alexander. Not a single brick has been taken there. Nobody's asked that question, right? But I can promise you all the ward councillors in Tembisa, in Alexander will still come from that same party. So you are now saying you want a change, you want responsible government and responsible politicians, but then you're not holding them to account for what they said and they will do and for what they're doing. And what I find frustrating as well is that the people that are in opposition or not in charge of the purse will also get the brunt of government. I'm sitting here with a ward councillor who gets to be blamed when there's no electricity. But he's sitting in an opposition bench. He can only call and say, please go and fix this. If City Power says, we don't have a budget or there's no diesel, what must he do? So do we explain that so that people understand that if you want the change, you have to then work at it and you have to then make sure that you bring the change. You can't be voting for the same person that has failed you and then tomorrow bend the street while they're failing. So what is it that you're trying to do there? You're not doing anything. You're going to fail time and time again. The other issue is then, are we able to then say, you are not guaranteed my vote? Because I think that is what somehow has lived in South Africa. This is why somebody said, "Ngizobusa until uJesu abuye," is because we've gotten to a stage where complacency has become the order of the day. to a point where even the officials will tell you, ah, you as politicians, you're here, but tomorrow I will still be here. This is what we get. And this is the change that we now need to then bring to them. So people, we must learn to hold people to account. Politicians must be held to account. Political parties must be held to account. Residents must take that responsibility to make sure that they do punish those that fail them. Because that's the only way you're going to get political parties or individuals that rise up and do what needs to be done. Because I'm scared that if I don't do what needs to be done, I'm not going to get the chance again in 5 years. But if I'm guaranteed that I'm going to get the chance again in 5 years, even when the economy has tanked, even when we have infrastructure that is falling apart, what is incentivizing me to then do better?
So you see the welfare as irrational in the way?
No. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying we must teach, because I think there's this disjointment. There's still people who are voting for Mandela. I'm not voting for an issue, I'm voting for Mandela.
I think with the median age of 27, people
don't. No, but I'm just giving you that as an example, and I can go on with a lot of examples as well, right? But I'm saying, until we get to a point where people are saying, I'm voting for the issues that are close to my heart. Young people rose up, even now under democracy, when we had the FISMAS fall. A lot of young people across political spectrum rose up and said, this cannot continue. We need something to be done. And something was done. They stood up. They understood that there was a mission and they stood behind that mission, right? Those that were in the institutions and those that were outside of the institutions, but wanting something better for young people. Do young people now want a country that is better, a municipality that is better? What are they doing about it? So is it an issue of annual vote, Abbas was born, or is it an issue of I'm going to listen and I'm going to interrogate and I'm going to then act? Because I think that's where we need to, and maybe that's where voter education needs to then come in as well.
Well, I'm going to open up the floor to the audience who started out very skeptical and distrusting of our politician. With just a few simple pointers, Sia's got a mic and he's gonna come here and he's going to look at anybody that wants to ask a question. And I would like to prompt you as such. With a declining number of people showing up at the polls, is our democracy losing its legitimacy because people are not showing up for it? Or is there anything that any of the political parties could do differently to gain trust with the voters? So I'll start with that. Think about it. Does anybody have a question? Does anybody want to ask a question? You can ask direct questions to the parties or general questions. Anybody can hazard an answer. Yes, no? Really don't want to talk to the politicians. There's a gentleman at the back.
I'm here with Engage SA, but I'm also a student leader at the University of the Witwatersrand. I serve as the Legal and Constitutional Affairs Officer coming back for my second term. I just want to answer the question with the question that you actually posed to say, are the voters actually irrational? I don't think voters are irrational in their response. They're actually rational in a system that is irrational. How can you defend democracy when it seeks to actually exclude you in most spaces? Currently, we have a lot of young people who actually vote and all of those things. They're in institutions of higher learning. They vote, they participate, and you see at the center of democracy, which is participation and all of those things. But you find that right now in January, we have students who are financially excluded, who do not have housing, who do not have access to food, and all of those things. So how do you defend such a democracy that seeks to actually exclude you from actually being a person in this country that, yeah.
I hear you. Interesting thought. Wanna hazard an answer? Anyone?
Let me quickly, and I'm going to go back to the answer that was given. That, and I think I'm going to touch on your statement you just made, sir. It was asked, on what basis do you vote? And most of the audience said policy. You know, and I think policy is good. Policy must be there. But most of these voters comes from a background of this being disadvantaged. Most of these voters are from townships, rural areas. They come from there. And for them, it's not about a policy. At that point in time. For them, the auntie that stays in a Nkuku for the last 30 years Where's my house? For the young man that was declined at Nasfas, I can't go study because my parents doesn't have money. What do we do? Can you assist? We get these questions constantly on the floor. So policy is not enough. It's not a wrong answer, but policy is not enough. And we're sitting with issues where people, youngsters really want to achieve better, but they can't. So how can we base our service delivery only on policy? Because in order for you to have a better education, we need to have answers to that. So parties come with their own ideologies. They come with their own ideas, but there's never compromise. With their ideologies, with their ideas, there's never compromise. So unless we, and let me just make this example quickly. During my campaign, I liked to speak to groups. If I see groups, I would run to that group, even if they're down there. And I spoke to two different groups separately. And both of the groups asked me the same thing. They asked me, what do you promise to deliver as a Lord Councillor? And my answer to them, nothing. And they were all stunned. You're coming to campaign, but you're not selling anything to us. I said, I can't. Because unless I step into that and understand what's available, then only I can deliver. And then only I can bring services to you, knowing what's in the pocket. And that's where accountability comes in, where government starts taking accountability of our townships that is suffering, our children that is suffering, our schools that is suffering. We're sitting with a school currently that burned down about 3 years ago. And I think the DA came in and they opened it up. And there was like 2.5 million stolen. The school is still not fixed. We're sitting with being a school that's overcrowded. So will policy assist that? My personal opinion, no. Policy will not assist that. Politicians that is ready to work, that's got a heart for politics, that's got a heart for people, sorry. Those are the people that can bring the difference, that will be able to go into, knock on doors, that the normal politician that only works for his pocket will not go knock on, will ask for funds where the normal politician will not go and he's going to be too proud to be able to ask it. So policy alone is not going to assist us.
Ishmael, I'm going to stop you there. And Sully, I want to put you on the spot and kind of taking from the gentleman's question or comment, the government of national unity. In your view, and being leading the Gauteng faction of a major party within this government of national unity, what responsibility do you think rests with the government to demonstrate that they can govern in unity? And also that they listen to every voice, yeah, as the young person said.
So this is why absolute power needed to be diluted in South Africa. Let's start there. Because you would have had political parties or a political party that has been in government by itself for 30 years, ramping or ramming whatever they wanted. You don't like it? Well, we're voting. And this is what I call the tyranny of the majority. You can put a proposal that is sound on the table just because they can vote and vote this way, they will vote that way, irrespective of how good a proposal that you put. And this is now why you now have a change that is now coming in, and it's slow, but it's coming in with the introduction of the GNU. By the way, some people want to then argue that we did have a GNU in South Africa under Nelson Mandela, but that was not... I want to explain to you. It wasn't. It's an argument in terms of what it meant. This is what it means now. The ANC could still force its way then because it still had the numbers. Now they don't have the numbers, so that's where the difference is, right? So now they have to listen, or else you're not going to be able to then pass the budget. Now you have to listen, or else you're not going to be able to then get certain policies, through the door. So that's where the difference is. Now, to answer what the gentleman was asking in terms of, how do I feel that the government is doing something for me? And this is why I said right from the beginning, we now need to be asking, what have been the promise of this political party that is in government? How much of the things that they promised have they been able to then deliver? How much have they failed? And then do they still deserve to get a chance for me with the failures that, that they displayed, or with the successes that they displayed, depending on which side you want to, place yourself. But again, it goes to that point that I was making to then say, I was hoping and I'm still hoping and wishing that at some point as South Africans, young, old, there can be an agreement in terms of what are these things that we need to agree to. And I make an example of education as a...
Before you make that, Aziz,
yeah,
because you did speak about that, is it, there's a comment in the front here.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Singita Chauk. So my question is directed to Mr. Soling with the question that you just asked now about the five things that we agree on. So I think it takes back us to that this trust that we have on politicians, because it all goes back to the politicians, because number one, the egos that you guys have is just too much. You will not agree on those five things that you're talking about. And another thing, you boast too much as politicians. One will say, we are here because of us. There will be a decree and that thing of data and airtime now. There's one political party who is boastful about it. So that's why the problem is going to be. You guys, the egos are too much, very much boastful. That's why you will not even agree on those five things. So how do we fix that?
Can I answer?
Surprisingly,
we agree on a lot of things. Why, but then
we, the politicians, yes, we with the people.
No, even the
politicians agree on a lot of
things. Even politicians, right? Even politicians who say they have constituencies that they represent, right? We agree on a lot of things. It's when we get on stage and you're like, how? We just agreed them. And then now you get on stage now because now your comrades are saying, let's go this way. Then the tone changes, right? But what I'm talking to is an agreement that can be put in writing and everybody knows. And that's why I made an example about China. The people of China know where China is going for the next 50 years. They know what needs to happen by when it needs to then happen. I think the other level or the other issue that is made, that has built the distrust that we're seeing, is because we haven't been able to then put timelines to certain things. That's why you can't hold people to account. Somebody says, no, we are having a train from here to Polokwane. We're coming to put a train from here to Polokwane. Okay, when? Where's the money coming from? Can we get to a stage where a politician says, we will do this? And then we say, okay, by when? And can you give us at least some time frames of at least this should be phase one? We should be able to then see, you know, that. Phase two, we should be able to then see this. But I can promise you now, bring Julius here, bring Groenewald here, bring... And you now have spoken to the extremes, right? And bring everybody in between and say to these guys, can we agree on five things? I can tell you what those five things are. The safety of the people, the economy that is moving forward, the health of the people, education of the people. And lastly, it is young people that needs to find, a space that they feel that they belong, because that's the generation that you're building. If you're able to then do that, and when I'm talking about that, that also now talks to the issues of infrastructure that you're putting in place. That talks to the issue of the investment that you now need to be. We can disagree on the models, but we can agree on the five things. And once you agree on these five things, you can then say, okay, if we're talking infrastructure, how do we then deal with the issue of the infrastructure? Do we want a stadium, or not a stadium, do we want new dams to
be
built?
We definitely don't want more stadiums.
No, I'm just looking at something there that just threw a stadium in my head. But do we say we need new dams? Do we need to fix the water infrastructure? I come from my township, even from the apartheid days, never ever went a day without water. Now we're lucky to go a week having a full week of water. So where to go and see how many areas now dependent on tankers? These are things that we can agree on. You fix these things, you start fixing the economy. Nissan now wants to close because of the infrastructure dilapidation that is in that place. Are we able to then say, if we able to then agree on the infrastructure fixing, we will be able to then retain the investments that we have and actually even attract other investments, which then takes care of other issues like unemployment and all of that. So I'm saying to you that there can be an agreement on five things. And we can then say, once these five things can be done, the other thing that needs to be... Yeah.
So you say they can be consensus. The problem that becomes political grandstanding.
Yeah.
My name is Bakabantu Kakba. Mr. Soli, I find it very laughable that you say I don't mean it as an insult, but then you say we need to agree on five things. I think we agreed on these five things in 1994 when we launched the constitution. We agreed on so many things that that would fix these things. The only problem we have is you politicians. This is where the distrust comes in, that you politicians have failed to deliver on that constitution, on that constitutional promise, because each and every one of your manifestos does read the same. You are right. You are likely to find more agreement in what you say. It's what you do. That's what matters. And you guys are found very lacking there.
I like that question. And I wish that I was in parliament in 1994 or belonged to that party that had the purse in 1994 up to 2 years ago. Just hold on a second.
Hold on. Yes, you weren't there, but let's shift it a little bit differently. Let's shift it a little bit differently. So there is a constitutional promise, set of promises that 30 years later have not been delivered on in major ways and in minor ways. If we were to look at it in this way, today and this year, if you were to say, what is the one thing, just one thing you would like to see the National Assembly get done this year? Let's look at it that way. What is it that you would like, with the government of national unity in place, what is it that you would like to see the National Assembly get done this year? And I'm going to ask all of you that same question. Okay. Let's start with you, Solly.
So what I would want to see happening this year is the refocus on infrastructure investment. You cannot talk about dealing with social ills while people are still hungry. And until we get the infrastructure right so that we're able to then attract investment, we're going nowhere. Until we deal with the issue of the ports, that now things are stuck there for months and months. By the way, now there's a route that is being built from Tanzania all the way to Namibia, to Walvis Bay. Because now they are saying bringing goods through to South Africa out of the Durban port is becoming mission impossible.
So infrastructure is your thing.
I would want that real, the change in focus. You know, people will hate me for saying this, but...
No one will hate you for saying
no,
say it.
I want to say something. Why are we borrowing money to give money away? Why are we borrowing money to give 350 rands every month away? Shouldn't we be borrowing...
We cannot answer that question for you. So I'm going to leave that question and hopefully there will be engagement on it. But your one thing for the National Assembly would be a refocus on infrastructure, the delinquency and state instead. What could your one thing?
I think the nature of any mentally ill, and I don't know, you overuse the word narcissist, is to deflect and not introspect. Mm-hmm. And such as we can blame everything. We don't have a problem of infrastructure. We don't have a problem of resources. We have a problem of leadership. We have a problem of individuals sitting in power, abusing that power. And there's no metrics in place to keep them accountable.
Okay. So is that your one thing that you would like to see, a metric to keep leaders accountable? And what would be your one thing that you would like to see the National Assembly achieve this year?
It's almost going to sound like I'm saying what you just said, Leadership. But my sentiment is exactly that. Accountability and making sure that politicians, corruption must be pushed out. Because unless we deal with that, the accountability issue, we can talk about infrastructure. We can talk about foreign investment. We can talk about the economy of this country. But unless they start taking accountability and start acting up and doing what they are supposed to do as politicians and putting South Africans first, then we're not going to go anywhere. So my thing is, let's put South Africans first. Let's deal with these corrupt politicians. Let's deal with these ones that doesn't want to take accountability. Let's deal with these ministers that sits there that doesn't do bugger all for South Africa. Let's deal with them and let us put proper leadership in place. Leadership is a big issue in South Africa. And unless we deal with it, don't get me wrong, we've got great leaders in South Africa. We've got learned leaders in South Africa, but it's not enough. We need to make sure they stand up and they do the work that they are paid for. And not just go there and drive in fancy cars and have a good time.
Be too articulate.
And use credit cards.
Don't deliver. Yeah. We don't normally ask the audience questions, and today I'm asking two. There's one more. There's a comment here. The two of you have each got a comment, or you've got a shared comment. Each have a comment. Okay.
Hi, I'm Hendrik Boerenstein, and I'm a councillor here in the city of Johannesburg. And your very first question was, do we trust politicians? And I think, which politicians? That's very broad. So apart from the scourge of corruption that we've grown accustomed to, we've seen a new thing rearing its head, and we've seen councillors in the city who beat up people, who go around with security and flashy cars and load people in car boots. I would like everybody then to answer me on how do you select your councillors? Because therein lies the real trust. If we say we go to the ground and we go to the ground levels, what are we really showing the people if we go to a macro and load people in the boot of a car?
Okay. That's a very loaded and very specific question. And do you want to ask your question or do you want to respond first? And then we ask your
question? It's a similar question. It's a similar question. So my question is, first, let me start with my name. My name is Bongani Nkomo. I'm also a councillor in the city of Joburg for the last 10 years. And I think through that time, what I've noticed is a consistent mass exodus of skills professionals. And also what I see on social media, it's the likes of your Vusi Tembagwayo's commenting. So my question to the panel is, in your various political parties, how do you plan to create spaces where professionals with a lot to offer, local government, whatever sphere of government, you know, we're referring to, how do you plan on creating a space for them to actually come in and also, you know, have an imprint in the change that they want to see? Bearing in mind that local government doesn't have the allure of corporate with big money, et cetera, et cetera. So how do you plan to create that space?
I'm going to ask that we don't degenerate to very specific questions, and both your questions are really around attracting skills and how councillors are selected within the parties. We'll start with you, Ishmael, and then I'll move to you, Lerato. Sorry, these are your councillors, so I don't know if you also want to answer how you selected these particular ones. Let's start with you. Selection of councillors and the people that, and how you attract the best skills and the best people, and if you believe you have those people within your party.
Let me start with your question. I also want to know, and that's where the higher level of government steps in, because I've been asking the same question.
Okay, tell us how you got picked to be a councillor, because you went through it. You got through it, but within your party, right. What is the process?
So within our party, we first look at your background. We look at your heart for people. If you look at our councillors, all of them were activists before they became politicians. All of them has been on
all
the ground
them?
With people. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. All of them. I'm talking about local government councillors. Mm. Local councillors. Mm. All of them has been on the ground and they've been working. And that's why when they stepped up to become councillors and they were elected based on the work that they've done. And I'm going to use myself for an example. For the first time in 32 years, nobody could take a award from the ANC. I came in, I took a award from the ANC. Nobody got it right. Everyone asked me. I had many conversations with different media houses. They asked me, how did you do that? I said, it's the work that was put in over the years. I've been an activist from the age of 13 years old. And that is how we are selected within the party. Not because you are popular, not because, well, popularity goes along with it, but not because you are popular, not because you are the best looking within the ward, but mainly because of your groundwork that you've done over the years without payment, without acknowledgement. And that is where, and that is how we select our councillors within the PA.
Lerato, your experience and Build One South Africa, I mean, when it started, there was a particular way in which the recruitment was done, but how do you make sure that you are attracting the best skills and the best people into your party? I think remembering the mandate of why we are even opportune to be in such tables humbles us in how we approach even the recruitment of our leaders. I did mention earlier on that I cannot solve issues of the people whom I do not understand what their pain points are and to actually collaborate with them in solving those pain points. And we follow such principles in how we recruit. We go back to the people, to the constituents and say, people, you are the 60 million that brought us to where we are. You know the leaders amongst yourselves, people who are already making strides, who are making change. They might not be wearing a political hat, but they are part of the solutions. The simple para by the road that when there is load shedding and the robots are not working and they see an initiative to go and stand there and direct traffic, that is leadership. Somebody who takes kids from after school and gets them off the street and gives them extramural activities to do so that they're safe until the parents get home. That is leadership. So elect amongst yourselves somebody who will sit together with us in the table because you elected them because they are already not only showing leadership, but they are proactively without wearing the political hat saying, I'm here. My passion and my heart is for my community. And once you can, you know, you can never buy passion or transfer it. And to be able to source from such individuals, then that already sets the person, up at an advantage. And you are able to work on other lagging areas such as illiteracy or however. Those are easy to build on, but passion is never transferable. So we look at that, and we let the people elect. So we don't take the boardroom behind the boardroom cadre employment because you are
new policy.
Because you're charming, you know, you're charismatic, and that is not the drive. So I think that is where we are, that we go to the grassroots. We don't have the answers, but let's together get the answers for the people.
So in case they've stacked the deck in your favor, you know, I'm not going to let you answer their question, but I am going to ask you this question in closing. If democracy is changing, sorry, there's one more question. See us making gesticulations. Fellow podcaster.
No, there's no such. I used to play for Val Professionals. You know, as younger, those who were there, yeah, retired footballer. But no, I debated whether I should, intervene because I think the microphone belongs to other people here. But anyway, but there's a point that was burning. I think Solly started off by talking about the politics of the world, where politics in the world are going now and kind of like the insularity that's happening, people drawing into their own lagers all over the world. And it's a very dangerous moment in the world because that is what's happening. And we're seeing what's happening, particularly in Europe and everywhere else. And at this particular moment, all of us have been watching the scenes in Minnesota. And the US is definitely at that point. So, I mean, like, we know we've been failed over the past 31 years by particularly, since 2009, when a certain guy took over, and we ended up being where we are. And, but the promise has not been lived up to. And that's why there's a lot of disenchantment with democracy. And then just want to say that, to you, Ishmael, you know, the very easy thing to do in politics is the politics of hate. And Mabahambe does feed into the politics of hate. And if we were to build an inclusive functioning democracy. I don't think the politics of hate is what we should be doing. And Mabahambe, not just you. It's not just your party that's doing it. Operation Tutula is doing it. And last week and this week, we've seen the scenes in Durban where little children were being pelted with objects by people wanting them to get out of here. They should not be enrolling at that school. I don't think that's the society we want to be building and the kind of democracy that we want to be building. Yes, there's lack of faith in that, like in politicians delivering to us, and lack of faith in people in the system basically doing what democracy should be doing. But I don't think we should hold government accountable in a hateful way by turning on those who are weaker than us. And the people who are weaker than us as South Africans are those who have arrived here from places where they have nothing. And they arrived here out of desperation. So I just felt I needed to make that point.
Well, Mondli, thank you, because that they is a perfect segue to the question that I wanted to ask you, Solly. Mm-hmm. And I will let it be the last question for the evening, is if democracy is changing, what does this moment demand more of our leaders and institutions in your view?
Right. I think democracy is actually, we're getting to a stage where democracy is maturing. The lack of participation is not unique to South Africa. You can look at the world over. People struggle to get voters in. The US would even go as far as to then say vote from your home or whatever, vote wherever is more comfortable, convenient for you to be able to then do that. That's how you wanting to push. And you would see in a lot of European countries, you still have very, very low your 20s, 30s voter turnout. And, you know, we're still lucky to be able to then see that about 45%. You're still lucky in that. And I don't think that with what we now need to then get to in South Africa, we can be complacent in that, right? But you ask what should be done. I think there's a need to have a serious, serious, serious voter education drive in terms of people learning the importance of democracy and the importance of voting, because that voting also then gives you a power or gives you a tool to then hold people to account. What did you do for me? What are you promising me? I can lend you my vote. So that is the first thing. The second thing that I think that came out that I wanted to respond to was, how do we make government work in a manner that is transparent, accountable, but also then people know where we're going? I think that's what is important. And this is why I made an example where I said this, that we now need to get to a point where we agree on what needs to be done and when it needs to be done or how it needs to be done. We now have what we call the IDPs, right? The integrated development, what is it? Plans, right? I promise you, people come there, make all sorts of speeches, we'll build a school, and then they leave.
You're pulling a classic politician move.
No.
In pivoting to say something outside of what you were requested to say. So I'm going to stop you because Stanley Dora on our side.
I absolutely hear you.
And I'm clear. I think you were concise in what you believe this moment requires of our leaders and our institution. So, Lerato, I'm going to say to you, in closing, as a closing remark, if democracy is changing, what do you think this moment requires of institutions such as your political party to close the deficit of trust?
I think it requires a bleeding...
Bleeding. Okay.
A constituency
to get themselves up and stop rewarding unperformance.
Okay.
To stop giving their trust and opening up to the same abuser over and over again. Essentially, that's what it's about. And to realize that
you know, the perpetrator is not willing to change. And so you need to change the marriage partner.
Okay. Ismail, for you, what do you think this moment in our democracy is asking of its leaders?
I think I've said it early on. Just be accountable. Leadership that's in place, let them just do what they have to do and make sure, and I'm going to say this again, let's make sure we put South Africans first. And I if I'm allowed, I just want to, you know, touch on what the gentleman said. You know, the way...
Gentleman.
The gentleman, the your fellow pop...
Podcast. Okay.
Yes.
Val professional, yeah. Former football player.
So I think I just need to get that one right. Remember, the Patriotic Alliance is not fighting against foreigners. They are fighting against illegal foreigners. This country has got a constitution to uphold. It's got policies in place to ensure that we are protected as a country. Against, remember, when an illegal foreigner comes in, he breaks the law. And that makes him a criminal. So how do you still protect a criminal? And that's the problem in South Africa. We protect criminals. If you break the law tomorrow, you'll go to jail. But you're allowing criminals to operate in your country. What we do as a party, we do not go around and say we hate foreigners. No, we don't. We work with foreigners. We will support foreigners as long as you are legal in this country. I'm going to take you back about a year ago.
Ismail, before we degenerate into specifics. No, seriously. And again, you too,
yes.
For a person who says you're an activist and you are pulling a politician move, in pivoting to party rhetoric, before you degenerate to those specifics and afterwards, we've got drinks and food, and I'm happy for you to continue the conversation and for all of you to please stay and continue the conversation and for everybody at home to continue the conversation in the comments. I want to hold you accountable to my question.
Right.
What do you believe this moment requires from its leaders to close the trust deficit with the voters?
Stop.
That's right. Answer that question.
Stop lying. The problem with politicians, they make promises, and don't deliver. You just mentioned, Solly, now the IDPs. I mean, we can speak about it the whole night. You come, and that is why people don't even go to these IDPs anymore. Then they are asked, why is people not attending, not interested? Because they're not interested because you speak the same thing every single year without fail. So stop lying to people. Be honest. I always say, and I've made this example while I was campaigning for myself. I always said, if I don't have a 5 rand in my pocket, I will never promise you I'm going to give you a tour and I'm going to give you that 5 rand. Because it must first be in my pocket before I make a promise. So stop making empty promises and deliver. That's all you must do. Deliver, deliver, deliver. And use the money wisely. Spend it proper. Give it to the right and stop stealing the money.
I think that's a perfect place to end. Thank you, lady and gentlemen, for coming and being with us tonight. Thank you, everybody in the audience, for your thoughts, your comments, and for everybody at home participating. Thank you for your comments and for joining us today. I think, if anything, I wonder if I asked the audience if they are more skeptical now of these politicians than they were when they started, what the answer would be. But I am not going to do that. Thank you for being here. Democracy Unplugged, the first one for the year. If our democracy is changing, are we as the voter changing at the same pace? Thank you, thank you, thank you. So there's drinks and food. Sia has walked away, and so I don't know if I've asked all the questions I'm supposed to ask. Sia's the boss. Are you happy, Sia? Are you happy, sound? Are you happy, cameras? Everybody's happy? Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for your time.